This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Welcome to the program. This is Mary Goulet, your co-host, with Richard Otey and Wade, and Steve is out for this week.
Where is he anyway?
He went on a camping trip with his oldest son.
Nice.
I don't know if it's either Boy Scout, Eagles, I don't know, something like that. And I'm just guessing that he's not in his element.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Right? So we'll hear some more stories about that next week. So today, our guest is Izzy Izzy. Let me see if I pronounce that correctly. Did I, Izzy?
About halfway there.
Oh, my gosh.
Izgawi.
Izgawi.
Izagwi.
Izagwi.
Oh, my Lord.
Izagwi. And here's what's sad, listener. I asked him, and I still couldn't get my tongue around it. We should have let Mary
hear. Most people do ask, and I tell them just to ignore the last name. Izzy is fine on its own.
Okay, Izzy. That's where we're stopping, right there. And then I know, is your website Izzy Speaks or izzy-speaks.com?
Yeah, izzy-speaks.com.
Okay, right on. Got that little bit of business out of the way. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you give us a little bit of a background, and then we can move into more of what you're up to today. So
sure,
background of
absolutely.
Who you are. Great, thanks.
So the elevator pitch. I grew up in the States. I decided to volunteer for the Israel Defense Forces when I was 18. Shortly after I finished training, war broke out on the Gaza border. My unit was sent straight to that action, and within a few weeks, I was hit by a 120-millimeter mortar, which is a very large military-grade munition. That munition took my left and dominant arm off on the spot. I was awake for the entire incident. I remember every moment until I was put to sleep for surgery. And when I woke up, shortly after the second or third surgery, when I woke up, I was already talking about returning to combat. I had a very strong drive.
Okay, so that begs the first question that just hit me was, you were raised in the States, so what made you decide to join the Israel Defense Forces?
Right, so for me it was mainly history. I grew up in a Jewish home, learned all about, everything from biblical times and the slaves in Egypt and the Holocaust. I met survivors, and it came really to pride, that we finally have a military, some way to stand up for ourselves, and I wanted to be a part of that, so I signed up.
Wow. Very cool, very cool. Well, that is a very traumatic experience, and, we appreciate you sharing that, and it does intrigue me with, how you dealt with that and kind of your outlook on it, because you're talking about negative energy. Right, as we've done a little bit of the pre-prep. And
right.
what I wanted to tie in is the other day on one of our other shows, we interviewed Shirzad Shamin, and he's a Stanford professor that talks about his website's positive intelligence, right? But he talks about recognizing that we've got within us sages and saboteurs. And those two kind of direct everything we do with the story we tell ourselves. And the interesting thing is, a saboteur on its surface may seem to be an ally. But it's only until we get deeper into it that we discover the sabotage aspect of it. So being you had that traumatic experience, you've got a passion and a drive, you seem to have discovered that some of the things you did to pull yourself out were actually negative things. And just what's so interesting that I'd like you to speak to is but they were effective, at least in part. And it took you,
right.
And then you realized, hold on, but they're not completely effective. So again, just the concept of here's something that I think is working for me on the surface, but as I go deeper, I discover it's more destructive. That's what you went through, correct?
Yeah, I would say saying in part is well put because, at the end of the day, I did succeed. I made it back to combat, but I can only imagine how much more successful I would have been, how much healthier mentally I would have been if I would have come from an approach that didn't have that saboteur, you know, some kind of negative influence.
So,
which was a big part of it.
So I have a question. This is Richard. I wasn't in on the conversation with you guys when you were talking about that, the negative energy piece. So I wanted to say, was to tie these two conversations kind of together, was this what fueled you wanting to get back in? Was winning, or was there some sort of negative energy that took you back in? Like, that's the piece I was missing there. Sorry.
And right. Just to add on to that, so could you identify what these pieces were?
Right. Well, first of all, Richard, pleasure to meet you. I would say it's multifaceted. I wanted to go back really to undo the damage. I told myself that if I went back, if I returned to combat, if I came full circle, then it's almost as if nothing happened. Mm-hmm. I'm whole again, despite, you know, missing physical pieces. So that was, I would say, the positive element of this multifaceted beast that I was facing. The negative came really during the actual trial and error of fighting my way back to combat, of doing the obstacle courses, of hitting the shooting ranges and trying to figure out how I was going to navigate these new obstacles, or really these same obstacles minus an arm, you know, with a figurative hand tied behind my back. And a lot of the time I was just beating myself up. I kept telling myself that I wasn't good enough, that no one believed in me, that this was never going to happen. And this is something I really don't talk about. I would like to think that I've overcome it to a very large extent. But back then it was swallowing me whole, and I'm almost surprised that I was able to succeed with that saboteur, you know, sitting on my shoulder.
Now, did you have family support in your decision to go back?
Yeah. I mean, Mary, the the first time around, I think I had less vocal support. My parents really, really stand behind all of their children with tremendous support, but my mother was terrified the first time around.
Yeah.
And a very good example of the difference would be that, you know, when I woke up after the injury in the hospital and the first thing I said was, I want to go back, you know, when my parents were standing over my hospital bed, my father burst into tears and he said, how could you even joke about going back after what happened to you? Of course you're not doing it. Like, you already know the risk. You've done enough. And my mother, who was standing on the other side of the bed, she told my father that it wasn't so simple, that if this is what my heart was telling me, then they have to stand behind me. And I was watching them argue. I remember it like it was yesterday. They're arguing over the bed, and I'm looking at them back and forth. And I was reading between the lines. You know, whether they wanted me to do it or not, they both believed that I could. They were talking about it as a real possibility, and that gave me so much strength.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, it's interesting how the second time, if you got your arm taken off your body, I mean, that, and then you have more support after that, that really shows that she knew inside that there was something way deeper than just the life and death, in my opinion. I mean, just my opinion, but I mean, because that you're even closer to death. There's proof sitting on the side of you. That thing's just a few inches one other direction, and you're done.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like
I would say that she's been stronger than me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, praise mom on that. Wow.
Yeah.
So then when you...
Definitely kudos to her.
So you went over for a second term or tour. How long were you there, and are you finished with doing those tours?
So the first portion of my service lasted less than a year because it was 9.5 months of training, a few weeks of war, and then the injury. When I went back, I believe it was for a total of a little over 2 years.
Oh.
A big part of that was fighting my way back into combat. Then I had some active duty, and then I ended my active service leading a squad of 13 soldiers through their advanced training, the most difficult part of training. And yes, I do continue to serve. I actually just served in reserve duty in the Special Forces less than 3 weeks ago. And it's something that I'm going to continue to do probably till the age of 40. That's the common age.
Well, very interesting. Well, we've got about a minute left. So a quick question is, where's your base of operations now? Where are you living these days?
just moved to Los Angeles 3 days ago.
Oh, wow.
That's a combat zone right there in traffic.
Welcome to California.
Yeah, but from New York City.
Oh, well, then there's the beach. Just go to the beach.
Yeah, yeah. But you can experience, you know, just our two biggest locations of chaos in the U.S. So in the next segment, perhaps we can drill down into some of the specifics. You know, some of, like you said, you're beating yourself up. Okay, how did that play out? When did you have the recognition that, you know what, this isn't working for me? How did you find those solutions? And then perhaps in the final segment, we can talk about how you're now sharing that with others and the different things you're doing to influence and change other people's lives. Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds great.
Alrighty, and so, Mary, the website one more time for Iggy, or Izzy?
Izzy-speaks.com. And,
We encourage everybody, you know, during this commercial break, open up another browser window. Take a look at it, see what all Izzy's up to. And when we come back in our next segment, we'll continue this discussion because it is so important for us to realize that sometimes we can be self-saboteuring, but because the immediate payback seems to be good, we don't appreciate the long-term consequences. This is Reinvention Radio. Mary, Richard, and Wade will be back shortly.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
Welcome to the program. I'm Mary Goulet here with Richard Otte and Wade. Steve is out for this week, so you're with the three of us. And we have Izzy with us as our guest. So, Wade, you wanted to bring in the next...
Well, just, you know, to kind of frame the conversation, because it is fascinating... You know, we're talking about, the show's about reinventing ourselves, and usually that starts with mindset. And so, Iggy, you had some true trauma, you know, dramatic things happen that made you more aware of mindset than most. And so just learning the lessons of what you learned, I think, would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would almost say in the beginning that I was not aware of mindset. It's something that later on when I had time to decompress, like well after returning to combat, that I realized, oh, maybe my approach wasn't okay. In fact, I would say the real resilience in this case was overcoming my own mind. I think that was the saboteur. The physical obstacles were far easier by comparison.
And so what are some examples, you know, like you said, you mentioned earlier, beating yourself up. So, you know, take us into this. Share with us those specific experiences.
Sure. I mean, very, very template. You know, I was so sure that by telling myself over and over again that I wasn't good enough, that I sucked, that no one believed in me, that I was, you know, egging myself on, that I was lighting a fire under my ass to like to succeed, to do a better job. But I think I realized with time that it was despite those negativities that I somehow managed to succeed. I mean, and we look at the physical elements of overcoming, just like one example. Every soldier in Israel who's going through basic training, the only way that they can achieve combat status is by passing a fairly brutal obstacle course that has all, you know, all kinds of things like rope, and you have to jump over a 7-foot wall and parallel bars and a whole bunch of different difficult things, and there's a long run before and after it. And you have about 10 minutes and 30 seconds, if I remember correctly, to, you know, to achieve this. And if you don't pass, you don't get combat status. And the first time that I tried that obstacle course with both my arms, I failed by like 3 seconds. And then the next morning, my officer woke me up, and he said, you got to do it again. And I think it was literally just because I couldn't bear doing it yet again the following morning. I was picking up on the trend that was about to happen, that I passed by like barely 2 seconds. So with both arms, I was able to pass the obstacle course in just about 10 minutes and 30 seconds. The first time that I tried as a one-armed combat soldier when I was fighting my way back into combat, I passed in 8 minutes and 30 seconds.
Whoa.
And my record is 7 minutes and 30 seconds.
Whoa.
So what Jedi mind trick did you play on yourself for that?
I'm wondering if all the other guys are... I'm going to be lighthearted here. I'm wondering if all the other guys are going through the course with one arm tied behind their back now.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, did you notice something in the course? Did you look at it different? Was it the mindset? Did you see the course the same as you saw it the first time? Obviously, I mean, that's a lot of time to knock off. A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine what my time would have been if I wasn't beating myself up. You know, I was so sure that I was doing it the right way mentally. And yeah, you know, you look at it at, you know, face value. I beat my time by a tremendous amount, but I was using the wrong approach. Like, if I had the mindset that I have today, which, by the way, I still have to stay vigilant, that negative voice, I don't think ever really goes away. You can find ways to quiet it. I think just being aware of it is massively helpful. I didn't know it existed. So I would say that I was able to do that despite the negativity. I used to think it was an asset before. Today I would disagree. But yeah, I mean, there were definitely soldiers that were doing the rope climbs with one hand when we were training together. I would train every single day before every meal. They have a rope in front of like the lunchroom or whatever you want to call it. And I would get so into the rope climb because it was the hardest obstacle I had to face. I still struggle with it. But I would get so into it that when I finished and I jumped down, there'd be like 100 recruits just standing around me with their mouths open that I didn't even notice before. So people were definitely paying attention, yes.
Well, in some ways, I think you probably ended up being a leader in a way that you never could have been had that not happened either.
They say that when you lose a sense, you know, your other senses overcompensate. I definitely think I grew in a few different capacities that are tangible, that you can actually track after losing the arm. Leadership, I would say, is one of them. Losing an arm gave me a voice, which is kind of strange. I mean, I became a writer after losing my dominant arm. So we always find ways to push back.
It sounds like you almost have a little bit of firefighter in you. You know, other people run away from the hard part. You're running towards the hard part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rope climbing with one arm.
Right. I'm going to take the hardest one and work on that first.
Jeez.
It's awesome.
Yeah, might as well get it out of the way, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to make it back, you got to conquer that one at some point.
Now, if you were restricted by the beating yourself up, now in hindsight, how would you have done it different?
I feel like I just wouldn't have. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why. And we all do it. I still catch myself doing it on occasion.
Well, if you
telling myself that I'm not good enough, that I won't succeed, that I'm dreaming too big. And all that does is really make it a reality. You know, I still have plenty of aspirations today that I haven't yet found my road toward, and I find myself doing it on occasion, telling myself that it's impossible, and if I think that way, that's what will happen. It will be impossible.
Yeah, it's fascinating. In some interesting way, too, it also says a lot about the Defense Force there, too, because I'm fascinated they let you even do it. Like, I don't think in America you, like, are you even allowed, are you allowed to go back in? I don't know enough about it. Like, just seem, well, that in and of itself seems unique.
Right. I mean, that's actually a very interesting conversation to have, and we won't delve too far into it. But first of all, I mean, the Israel Defense Forces has units that have people with autism and even Down syndrome. Obviously, they're not going to serve in combat, but anybody who wants to contribute, you know, the Israel Defense Forces finds a way to let that happen. They work in intelligence. They work with numbers, whatever their specialty would be. You know, having said that, somebody with one arm going back to combat, I was told, you know, straight up, I was told no many, many times. And I asked everyone. I found the right general, a man with a very kind heart, who told me that if it made sense, we would try together. We would make it happen. And he was a man of his word. When the time came and I felt ready, he helped me re-enlist. And that's when I was given the opportunity to retake all of the tests that a combat soldier normally has about 9 months to finish. I was given 1 month to finish them all.
So
that includes the obstacle course, the firing range, everything.
Wow.
The obstacle course, was that, like, turn some heads? Especially that general, he's like, wow, you trimmed 2 minutes off your time. Or more.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody was paying attention. Like, nobody knew that I was struggling, that I was doing 10.5 minutes. The first time around, I think they were convinced that because I wanted to go back, I must have been a badass to begin with, which was not the case. But yeah, I mean, people were excited about it. I feel like people probably still talk about it there. I'm kind of disconnected. I don't live in Israel. I'm not on base a lot. But I'm always surprised when somebody tells me that their commander, you know, spoke about me during basic training or something like that.
It always
feels good to hear that.
Yeah, I know for this particular show, don't necessarily want to go down that, but I would love at some point to talk to you or find out more about that. What's a good way, or I'm sure other people might, what's a good way for us on social media to follow you or connect with you, or is it best to email in that scenario? We got like 2 minutes left in this segment, so let us know how to connect socially, and then we'll kind of close out this and get into the...
Yeah,
absolutely. I do have a public Facebook page. Very, very difficult to spell that last name, but it's IZZYEZAGUI. Yeah, it'd be great if people followed along. I do have a book coming out next year in March, my first memoir. It's called Disarmed, I would say, quite appropriately.
Nice.
Should be fun.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah, and in the next segment, I'm really interested to see how you parlayed your experience, your, you know, emotionally, psychologically, maybe spiritually, and everything into talking points and who your ideal audience is for your message. Because
absolutely.
Now, you're out speaking and you've written a book, and that's so inspirational, especially going back.
Yeah, it blows me away. He's still going back there. Like, you hear in the little bits. Yeah, when I go back on base, right? Or, you know, like, oh, that's right. He's actually still going back, right? In the midst of all this, talking about the negativity and getting through that. But who knows, you know, I'm kind of a believer, you know me, that it's parts in the story, sometimes pressure. We were just talking about right before, no pressure, no diamonds. You can't even grow sunflowers without pressure. But later on, that pressure could kill that sunflower. So depends on the context of the scenario, but it's an awesome story.
Yeah.
This is great.
And I've said many times that adversity is what stretches us and makes us grow. And some of the worst things that I've experienced in my life have made me such a better person. And it sounds like you've done that in spades.
Oh, I definitely subscribe to that. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so then when we come back, let's get into your speaking career and how you've been impacting people with your message. You're listening to Reinvention Radio. We'll be right back.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
Welcome to the program. I'm Mary Goulet, and with Richard Otte and Wade in studio.
Hello
guys. Steve's out this week, so we have our guest, Izzy Izagwe. Did I do it right that time?
Yes,
the second time.
Second time, I know. I tripped on my tongue on that one. Okay, so in the last two segments, we've covered your background and some of the things that you recognized to be super successful and go back into combat. And in this segment, we kind of want to know, one, how were you inspired to go ahead and turn this into writing your book and being a speaker out for, not sure who it is, what's your ideal client for that, your ideal audience for speaking the story?
Right. So, I mean, my audiences have really come in all, you know, everything from the corporate level to, you know, universities and, you know, middle schools. So I'm really happy to talk to anyone. It's more about the goal and what I'm hoping people take out of it. So the one that I'm kind of going to skirt over, the simple one, is just a fresh perspective on Israel. I think Israel gets a pretty bad rap most of the time. You know, no country's perfect, but I'd say they're pretty good overall and they have the right intentions. So I'm hoping that just through hearing my narrative that people delve into it a little deeper, that they end up researching it later on their own. And another super important thing to me is just generally the trend I've seen with the other soldiers out there who have, like, wonderful stories. I'm talking about U.S. veterans like Pat Tillman, Chris Kyle, Marcus Luttrell. These are people that I look up to. I've read their books. They're fascinating to me. But I've when reading their material, when listening to their interviews, the only thing I'm thinking the whole time is, wow, these people are such badasses. Like, of course they've succeeded. Of course they managed to do these impossible feats. And I imagine that if I'm feeling that way, then most people are. Like, it's not an attainable mindset. You know, they're up there, they're heroes, they're on the pedestal, and we're down here. And one of the reasons that I wrote my book was to give people the opportunity to hear from somebody that once they finish reading, they'll probably say something more like, wait a second, that Jewish nerd from Miami did all that? That dork? Like, I guess I can do anything. You know, we're on the same level. There's no disparity between where I stand and where they stand. And that's super important to me. Like, I want people to feel like they can do anything. You know, a huge percentage of America, I'm sure you could look up statistics, considers themselves disabled in some way. You know, not all disabilities
or
are visible.
Or dorky, right?
Well, dorky most of us. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. So, no, I mean, that in and of itself, it's not worth flying over. I don't want to fly over that. Just that. If you can help people who feel dorky feel more badass, that might be, like, not only the biggest market, but, like, the biggest service to the world ever.
Richard, I charged down the battlefield. I've been hit by rockets. I've been back on the battlefield with rockets, you know, shooting towards me. And when I'm sitting at a Starbucks in Los Angeles now, I still start to get queasy when a pretty girl walks past me. So, you know, that's really who this book is catering towards, people who can relate to that.
Yeah, and I think that you do qualify for badass status.
As long as dork is in the equation.
Right on.
If we're going to call me a badass dork, I'm in.
All right, I'll buy it. I'll buy the bumper sticker, too.
So then what are some of your, like, talking points in your presentations?
Okay, that's a good question. I can give, like, one, like, I guess a taste of the kind of value I hope people take away. One story that I started telling recently, I just remembered it, is sometimes our weapons are hidden right below the surface. And the example I give is how when I was on the shooting range, I was given 2 weeks to, you know, like a box of ammo, 2 weeks and a rifle to figure out how to shoot and load and unjam and do all those things that a combat soldier has to do. And I was not expecting that to be one of the more difficult obstacles. Again, huge nerd, spent my whole young life gaming, you know, great hand-eye coordination, great vision. But when it came down to actually loading the rifle, I found that every single time I tried to do it, it would jam because I didn't have that second hand to hold it still, and it would jump when I was pulling the loader. So every single time I tried to load a bullet into the chamber, the rifle rests on my thigh when I'm in a kneeling position facing the targets, and it would jump back, so I couldn't shoot. And after like a week of trying this to the point where my elbow was starting to get sore and you know, inflamed from just that pulling over and over again, I thought that I'd failed. I thought that I'd made it that far and that I wasn't going to succeed. And eventually I realized that the only source, physical source that I had on me that could hold the rifle still was what remained of my arm, that stump from the injury. And we're talking about something that's still, you know, very, very soft and unused to being, you know, have pressure put on it. I have severe phantom pain, which is something I still suffer from. And I ended up pushing down onto the rifle while it was on my leg, using that you know, what remained of my arm, so that I could load a bullet into the chamber without it jamming. And that pain was so difficult, so severe that first time that I actually blacked out. I didn't fall. My vision turned black. I couldn't see for a few seconds. But when I lifted the rifle and I fired it towards the targets, it fired. Like, it worked. Now, at that point, I could have told myself, okay, this isn't worth it. Maybe time to pack up and go home. But I tried again and again. And what ended up happening after three or four times, to my utter amazement, was that instead of blacking out, instead of nearly losing consciousness and having a negative there, it became an asset because I started to get rushes of adrenaline every single time I loaded the weapon, and things would move slower and the lines on the target would become clearer and my shot actually became better. And that is something that I still use today. It's my secret weapon. Every single time I load my rifle, I get a boost of adrenaline. It's like Wolverine every time he lets his claws out, to be a nerd yet again. It's become a tremendous asset to my shooting abilities.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
I was just going to say, this is one of the reasons why you always hear me go, you have to go three wise deep. You hear how he's been saying sometimes it's been felt negativity, beating himself up and all this stuff, and you never know. I mean, there might just be a voice behind that negative voice that you're not hearing quite is loud, but you're subconsciously hearing it still. And these are, you know, I just love it because we were talking right before this saying we're a sack of chemicals that thinks about thinking, you know, this is my kind of Richieism, we're a sack of chemicals that thinks about thinking. And the four main chemicals that are used are dopamine, adrenaline, serotonin, and oxytocin. Dopamine's the dangerous one that people get addicted to, the phones, the sex, the drugs, the whatever. Oxytocin and serotonin help combat that because that's the human connection one. You don't need that other one as much when you have that. And then the adrenaline is the how the mom gets the kid. It's the temporary mask of pain that gives right. mom the ability to lift up the car, and that's what he's using this. So it's just interesting, Izzy, that we were talking about all this prior and had nothing to do. So I love when we have a guest that just seems like the whole day kind of comes together too. You weren't privy to that, obviously, but thank you for sharing your story. I look forward to more. I'll be following you on social.
Yeah, and also, we got about 30 seconds left, so thank you so much for being with us. It was an amazing story. Izzy-speaks.com is where you want to go and see pictures of him in some of your combat gear, which is awesome. And your ability to conquer that rifle by using your arm and sticking with it became your superpower. And the way you figured that out, and you probably have many, many more superpowers that you can share in your stories to these audiences and inspire even just one kid.
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Izzy, for being with us.
Thanks,
Izzy.
Hey, we're in Reinvention Radio, and we'll be back next time.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulscher, visit reinventionradio.com.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.